Good morning, everybody. I'm Susan Denser, Editor-in-Chief of Health Affairs, and I have the pleasure of welcoming you here this morning to the final session in a series of 12 events designed to offer ideas to President-elect Barack Obama and his transition team, soon to be the governing team as of early next week. The Brookings Transition Project is an attempt to refine the policy agenda following what was obviously a watershed election in the onset of a few interesting issues that we now face, among them the global financial crisis. Some of you have joined in these previous discussions on poverty, on climate change, and other issues, and we appreciate your being with us again today. This is, of course, a time of memos and lots of advice to the incoming administration on matters large and small. Some of you may have seen a series of memos that appeared in today's New York Times. One of them came from Matthew Wong, age 8, of Chicago. Dear President Obama, the first thing you need to do is put your stuff in the White House. Important piece of advice. Catherine Galvin, age 6, obviously a young woman wise beyond her years, wrote, Dear President Obama, if I were president, I would tell people to not talk too much. It wastes time. Okay. So these are obviously
Here
people with lengthy experience in government, and obviously she obviously did a stint in the U.S. Congress, among other things, to have walked away with that wisdom. Well, we have a very succinct memo today to speak about, which is Henry Aaron's memo to the president-elect and the incoming administration on another small matter, which is this small matter of what do we do with a $2.2 trillion healthcare system that is growing on average 2 percentage points faster than real GDP, arguably delivering less value for the money than we would hope, not managing to distribute the benefits equitably across the population, leaving close to 46 million people uninsured at any given point in time, lots of incentives pointing in the direction of overuse as opposed to wise use, and about 400 other problems that we could think of to highlight. So let me introduce both Hank here formally now and the respondents who will be discussing and amplifying on some of these things. Henry Aaron, of course, as you know, is a Brookings Senior Fellow. He's followed efforts to reform healthcare since the beginning of time, I believe, at least the 1970s. He's the Bruce and Virginia McLaurie Chair here at Brookings, and he has an article on healthcare reform in the current issue of Health Affairs, that is to say, a special package of inaugural perspectives, which we released at midnight tonight, and I'm very proud to say that Hank's is among the wonderful perspectives that we are bringing out. Those are available for free on the Health Affairs website at www.healthaffairs.org. After Hank has a chance to lay out what he says in his terrific memo to the president-elect, we'll hear from Alice Rivlin, who's also a senior fellow here at Brookings, Brooklyn. Whoa. Did you land in the Hudson River this morning? I guess I have New York on the brain. Alice is a senior fellow here at Brookings. She was recently named one of the 25 most influential public servants of the last 25 years by the Council for Excellence in Government. She previously served as director of OMB and was the founding director of the Congressional Budget Office. Notably, her service at the CBO kicked off a tradition of Brookings scholars being named to that post, most recently, of course, Peter Orszag. Chris Jennings is a health policy veteran of the Congress, of the White House, and the private sector. He currently serves as president of Jennings Policy Strategies, a health policy and advocacy consulting firm in Washington. He currently serves as co-director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Health Reform Project, along with former Senate Majority Leaders Baker, Daschle, Dole, and Mitchell. And of course, Chris, having been a veteran of the last time we were assembling in rooms talking about the potential imminence of health reform, is a perfect person to have commenting on these perspectives today as well. So, Hank, I'd like to start with you. You lay out an agenda for comprehensive health reform, but you're not so optimistic about getting the whole thing done all at once. In fact, you suggest very carefully proceeding in steps. So let's lay out for the audience what it is you suggest.
Well, the starting point, I think, is that for those who hope for health care reform, there is an awful lot of good news and reasons for optimism. But there are also reasons for concern and caution. because all of the obstacles that have stymied previous efforts to reform our healthcare system are almost as strong as they were the last time. So I'd like to go through a bit of the good news and the bad news and then explain why I think one needs to be ambitious but cautious. Start with cost. There have been a variety of estimates of the additional cost of healthcare to cover everybody in the nation. It's on the order of $100 billion a year. Until about 3 or 4 months ago, that number scared people. For reasons I think we all understand, it has less capacity to shock than it did back then. Indeed, the idea of spending additional money now in order to help spur economic growth is perhaps even a plus. So the cost obstacle is dramatically weakened. A second factor is that as people lose jobs, they lose access to health care, and they become fearful. Not just those who lose jobs, but those who fear they might lose jobs. So a dynamic that has occurred in the past may occur all too strongly now as unemployment rates rise. That is a popular concern about securing access to one of the most important services people have. Business leaders increasingly recognize that they cannot control by themselves the growth of healthcare spending. We have entering the White House a charismatic president supported by increased majorities, supportive in general terms of extending health coverage and reforming the system. So for all of those reasons, it's really not at all surprising that those who have been waiting a long time to see a bold thrust to reform the healthcare system are optimistic and want to go for broke. The obstacles, however, to action remain about as strong as they have been in the past when they succeeded in stymieing previous efforts. And for that reason, I think the central issue confronting the incoming administration is how to choose its strategy for making as much progress as possible. The reason this is so important is that there is one outcome that I don't believe either the nation or the administration for political reasons can countenance, and that is coming away once again empty-handed from efforts to reform the healthcare system. What are those obstacles? First of all, the U.S. healthcare system is dauntingly large. My colleague Charlie Schultz pointed out it's as big as the whole economy of France. It is not easy for a democracy, particularly a democracy whose political system is calculated to frustrate action when the population is closely divided. It is not easy for a democracy in one bill to change something the size of the economy of France. The industry is enormously diverse. It employs a great many people, probably more than 20 million in total, 700,000 physicians. There are 6,000 hospitals, each of which incidentally supplies jobs to communities and therefore is very difficult to downsize when that may be necessary to save money. There is an important basic fact about healthcare reform, and that is that first and foremost, since we're mostly going to be spending monies that we previously were spending, if it's reform, it's income redistribution. It's shifting spending, it's shifting power among groups that are going to be resistant, at least those who would stand to lose, resistant to action. And the last point I'm going to mention is simply to remind you all of what you probably have thought about many times. Healthcare is very uneven and diverse across this nation. Per capita spending is 60% higher in Massachusetts than it is in Utah. The proportion of the population that's uninsured ranges from 25% in Texas to now under 3% in the state of Massachusetts. So the problem of healthcare reform is distinctly non-uniform across the United States. It's important, therefore, I think, for an incoming president there to think about those specific actions which need to pass because they will set in motion a process of reform that is likely to continue throughout and beyond his administration. So what are key strategic initial steps that should be, in my view, at the top of the agenda? The first is an item from President-elect Obama's agenda, and that is his proposal to set up a health insurance clearinghouse to improve the extremely dysfunctional market for small group and individual insurance. And incidentally, to create a vehicle that could eventually become attractive even to those large employers who currently manage and self-insure their own plans. That kind of an institution creates the potential for evolving into an instrument that could leverage system-wide reform in a way that no entity now in existence would be able to do. No entity, I will say, with the possible exception of Medicare, which unfortunately Congress has not been willing to use to leverage system reform throughout its history. The second and third areas are ones that are almost so commonly discussed they have become genuine no-brainers. Vigorous steps, which include both money and regulatory leverage to introduce health information technology. It's easy, those words trip easily from the tongue. Exactly what the content of health information technology is of critical importance. And I will assert that as of now, we do not have the software and the specific techniques that we should have to derive the maximum benefits from health information technology. And that suggests the current risk. That risk is throwing a lot of money at health information technology in the stimulus package before the knowledge about how to do it right has been fully developed. Third, evaluation of medical technologies, both new ones and ones that are already in practice. That involves both comparisons and it involves cost. Congress has been very chary about doing that, although people left, right, and center give lip service to the importance of such evaluation. The history of our efforts to implement such evaluations is dismal, it's sad, and it should give caution to those proceeding ahead. Just as an anecdote, last year, Senator Baucus introduced a bill, the first year appropriation for which on health evaluation was to be $30 million. For those of you who think about the magnitude of the industry, the range of techniques, and the cost of research, you will appreciate how grossly inadequate that kind of a down payment would have been. In addition, the legislation barred discussion of cost effectiveness and instructed attention only to comparative effectiveness. And finally, I think, although it's difficult to imagine at this point in time, there was until recently a great deal of interest among the states in trying to proceed to extend health insurance coverage. One state, Massachusetts, moved boldly ahead. A number of other states discussed it. Revenues proved inadequate, the risks too great, the political energy behind it not sufficient. I think it's important, in view of the probability that full reform will not be enactable in the near term at the national level, that the federal government supports such state efforts. And that means regulatory flexibility, legislative waivers where necessary, and some financial support, as was available in Massachusetts, to help states implement and take on the risks of covering additional people. Now, a lot more may well be possible. Some is certain. Congress is going to enact an extension of the state child health insurance program, probably within a matter of weeks. It's entirely possible and likely that Congress will reform the way in which physicians are paid under Medicare. And still other steps, I am sure, there will be an effort to achieve, including quite possibly the provision of subsidies to make health insurance affordable for more American families, possibly proposals to reform the way in which the tax system is used to encourage